Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
We have a rather fascinating program today on Crossover with guests from the Ocean Grove Auditorium in Ocean Grove, New Jersey. Gordon Turk, organist, and John Shaw, curator, and I guess historian as well. Welcome to Crossover, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Let's begin a little bit, John, with a little background about Ocean Grove and what is so special about the site and also about where we are going to listen to this wonderful concert.
Well, Ocean Grove was founded in 1869 as a Methodist camp meeting ground. And from that, it developed into a year-round community. And in 1894, a large auditorium was built in Ocean Grove, seating 10,000 people. And people would come for the summer relaxation and for the services and the concerts that were held there in the auditorium. And in 1908, the trustees determined that they needed a large pipe organ built for use in the auditorium and to accompany the congregations who were coming and for concerts and organ recitals. So the big organ was installed in 1908 by a company in Elmira, New York, which was founded by an English organ builder, Robert Hope Jones, who came to this country in 1903. And that's what we're celebrating this summer, is the 100th anniversary of the opening of the organ in the Ocean Grove Auditorium.
And what is the date of that?
That's on July the 3rd, 2008, pardon me.
But it was 1908.
1908, actually. And as a matter of fact, opened on the evening of July the 3rd of 1908.
A very patriotic opening, I would think.
Absolutely.
And for we are, of course, in closer to South Jersey, but Ocean Grove is really North Jersey near Asbury Park. And for all of you listeners who are interested in hearing this wonderful concert, that's where you would have to go. Gordon, now, you will be playing. Gordon, of course, an established, well-known organist here in our parts and everywhere else, I think. You
yes.
are also organist at the site, is that
yes,
right?
Philadelphia's home base for me. Yeah. But in the summer, I move my whole base of operations to Ocean Grove and to the auditorium. One of the things I like about the building is that its name, Auditorium, reflects its history and its purpose. It was really built as a place in which people were to hear speakers, an oratory, speaking without any reinforcement of electronic means, because they didn't exist at that time. So speakers had to learn to practice with pebbles in their mouths down on the beach, I guess, then come up to the auditorium and do their preaching and their speaking. There have been presidents who have spoken there, many celebrities of past years, and wonderful music takes place in the room. So the word auditory reflects the whole concept of what the building is about. And Caruso has sung there, and
really?
Gallicucci, and John McCormick, and Madame Schumannheink, many famous singers and wonderful musicians from the past.
Now, who was the person that had the feeling that the music should be incorporated into this whole establishment? It was something that, again, as you say, started out as it was a camp meeting, of course. Mm-hmm. And that was, of course, religious based, but it evolved into a place where noted performers would come.
Well, there's always been a great feeling for community singing there, and particularly in its Methodist roots. Methodists are great singers of hymns, so it's enthusiastic hymn singing is one element of that. That's one of the reasons they needed a large instrument that could lead very large congregations of singing. And then the interest in the arts and music in general was evidenced in particularly the direction of a Welshman by the name of Taliesin Morgan, who was the director of music there at the turn of the century, of the 19th to 20th centuries. And he brought these spectacular performers from all over the world, and being Caruso and Madame Schumann-Heink and many others, and also orchestras. And he directed large choral programs for both adults and children's choral music.
Yes, it sounds like enormous forces. How big is the auditorium? How many seats does it have?
Well, it was built for 10,000 people.
My goodness.
When the organ went in, however, they had to modify the front of the building in order to accommodate the organ. So, and then over the years, the seating has been changed, so that today it seats 7,000 people.
That's enormous. That's larger than Radio City, I think. That
absolutely
they,
is.
They seat 6,500.
We exceed that.
Really, it's really incredible. So, initially, of course, it was a religious camp meeting ground. That's really basically what it was. And so you expected large audiences, but this was again incorporated the music into the services, I guess. And then it was expanded. What is the building like in terms of the architecture?
Well, I would call it Carpenter Gothic. The entire building is wood and very Victorian looking. I think the only iron in the building are the seven main trusses, which hold the building up. And from that, it's all wood and beautiful ceiling of Carolina pine, and galleries around three sides of the building. And anywhere you sit in the building, you have a clear view of the speaker. And, of course, with the acoustic in the room, the sound of the choir and the congregational singing as well as the organ is just absolutely wonderful.
It must be overwhelming because it's all wood. It's like one great big sounding board, I think.
It's a very warm acoustic and great clarity.
It's really amazing. I mean, it's amazing and also a rather well-kept secret, I think, in terms of the musical community and performance space. Mm-hmm. I mean, one really doesn't kind of think about, well, maybe we'll give a concert at Ocean Grove, I guess. Mm-hmm. Now, it is, of course, a summer community, isn't it?
Yes, it is. The auditorium is open from the early part of June until usually the second week in September. So it's the opportunities there are confined to the summer months only.
Poor Gordon, you must have. It was a hard decision for you to make to go up there for the summers.
Yes.
So it's really quite beautiful. I mean, you're right on the ocean, and it's ideal. Now, this concert will be, again, a centennial birthday concert. It's 100 years of the organ.
Right.
And now tell us a little bit more. John, you had said something about a new gallery of...
As a part of the celebration this summer, we have just installed a new division in the rear of the building, 300 feet from the main organ, called an echo antiphonal division. And this division was installed over the winter months and will be heard for the first time as a part of the concert on July the 3rd.
I'm speechless. That's really going to be something, isn't it, Gordon?
I certainly hope so. I've been looking forward to this with great anticipation. And I have just now am beginning to hear the first little notes coming out of the pipes, because they were installed during the winter while the building is down, as it were. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the organ is in hibernation at that point. And so the installation, the physical installation, was accomplished during this past winter. And now John has just finished the solid-state wiring that will connect the back organ to the main organ, which is 300 feet away. And now I'm beginning to hear a few sounds, and this next week we'll start tuning it and regulating and doing what we call tonal finishing, and then we'll have this wonderful effect.
In terms of size, is this one of the largest organs in the world, or is this just one of the oldest organs? Or,
well, in terms of size, the instrument at 10,823 pipes is one of the largest in this country. There are several that are larger, but it is one of the largest in the United States. And with the new gallery division, we were very fortunate in that we weren't planning for a new division in the rear, but we had a very generous patron decide that she wanted to do something special for this great celebration, and the whole gallery division was underwritten by an anonymous donor, And we certainly were very delighted to get that information last year and have this new division built, especially for the auditorium.
Now, for the series that you have, are people allowed to just come in, and or do they is there someone to contact in terms of perhaps, you know, attending the series?
Well, they can get tickets in advance on and by going online, but they can get tickets just at the day of the concert, too. The ticket office is there and is open during the day and right up into concert time itself.
And it is open to the public.
Oh, yes.
Certainly.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I, the reason I ask, of course, is from many, many years ago. I'm from North Jersey, and as I told John earlier, I remember that on Sundays, if you were walking on the boardwalk and you came to Ocean Grove, it was cordoned off and you couldn't go in because the entire community was closed. But it's not like that anymore.
No, it's not like that anymore. Originally, as you've mentioned, this community was closed. All the cars had to be off the streets in Ocean Grove from midnight Saturday until midnight Sunday. And you could walk and play ball in the streets or walk anywhere in Ocean Grove without having to confront someone in a car. But I guess in the early 70s, that was changed, and now the community is open, and people come in by car and buses, come in for the festivals, the choral festivals that take place.
And there were stringent blue laws.
Oh, yes.
Are they still there?
You couldn't go on the beach on Sundays.
No.
And
they're more pale blue at this point.
But the beach is now open on Sundays, and it seems to have been very successful since it's
open.
Okay,
that has a way of changing things a little
bit, I suppose.
Well, it is a beautiful location. So now, what have you chosen for the concert, Gordon?
Well, I've chosen a combination of instruments and music that will celebrate the organ and its history, and that will also reflect music that was being composed and performed around the time that this organ was built, and that is the turn of the century, the early part of the 20th century. And for that occasion, I've invited some guests to join me for the concert. And I have my colleague and friend, Michael Stairs, who is the organist with the Philadelphia Orchestra, and also the Philadelphia Brass Ensemble, one of our finest brass ensembles in the Philadelphia area. And we'll have six brass players and also timpani, a young timpanist from New York, graduate of Curtis and who is now at Juilliard. And this program will celebrate music that is at the root of organ music by starting with the famous Toccata in Fugue in D minor of Bach. You can't have an organ celebration without having that piece appear somewhere.
Absolutely. So. That's a wonderful one to start with. Yeah. Oh, that will sound spectacular with this newest edition, won't it?
Oh, it'll be wonderful. Absolutely.
Absolutely incredible. And then some Handel, of course.
Yes.
No, it's not Handel. Well, it's Allah Handel, isn't it?
Yeah, Allah Handel. Karl Gellert was a German organist who came over at the turn of the century, did a lot of concertizing in the United States, and we're going to do two pieces by him. He wrote in a very lush, late romantic, impressionistic style, and then some transcriptions of wonderful pieces, also some original music for brass and organ, and some transcriptions. One of which is famous, made famous in the movie 2001.
Oh, yes.
The Also Sprague Zarathustra.
Well, you have to use that if you have this new edition. I mean, you really got to show this
thing
off.
That's right.
You know,
yeah.
That's, of course, yes. Okay.
And then a wonderful, very rich and incredible crescendo building piece that was written by Richard Strauss called Feierlicher Einzug, a solemn procession that he wrote for brass ensemble, timpani, and organ. And it's one of the most majestic and rich pieces that has been written for that combination. And it has all those inimitable harmonies of Richard Strauss, that it has that chromaticism and the beautiful, intense harmonies that just unfold so wonderfully.
And then something by, Marcel Dupré, is that it?
Yes. And the Dupré, who was the organist of great note, perhaps one of the greatest concert performers of the 20th century organ world, played for many years at the Basilica of Saint-Sulpice in Paris, but played all over the world. He also played at Notre Dame for a while, concertized extensively in the United States, including Philadelphia. And Michael Stairs will be playing a movement from one of his suites for organ, a berceuse. And then he will also be playing a very moving and beautiful piece for brass and organ, Poem Héroïque, and also field drum is highly displayed in this particular piece.
And you will be doing your own transcription of Finlandia, which, of course, is stirring, and especially on the organ. And again, I can't reiterate enough the acoustical grandeur of this building and what an experience it will be musically, I think, to hear this. Now, again, for our listening audience here on Crossover, this will be broadcast not on the date of the concert, but we will be rebroadcasting it, a live performance, later on this year. For the audience today, we're listening to some performances that have been recorded in the actual hall. Gordon, you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I have music that I've recorded with a company a few years ago, which features a French program called Organ Spectaculars. And there's music of Vierne and of Moulet and Gigou and many other French composers, Vidor, of course, and Léon Bollmann, who's a Belgian composer. And it shows pieces from loud to soft to colorful to intricate to serene, a gamut of French literature that is particularly suited to a dramatic and a large instrument.
I think that so much the role of this organ is, or of perhaps of the organist in choosing repertoire, is to show off the various aspects of the instrument and to show the richness of the hall as well. Mm-hmm. So this is a unique experience as well. Gordon, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, so. I'm a graduate of Curtis, for doing more recent background, and following that, I went to Manhattan School of Music, where I did both a master's and a doctorate. Actually, there was an interval in between in which I was studying composition, really interested in improvisation. And my studies in improvisation led me to a composer and improvisator in New York, named McNeil Robinson, with whom I began studying improvisation. But the way we did it was really through classical compositional apprenticeship. So I spent 4 years working with him that way and studying from the 16th through 20th century music was very interesting time. So that was part of that. Beyond that, then I thought, well, I might as well continue. I'm doing all of this intense study, hours and hours a day, and do my degree work because I'd like to teach also. So I went to Manhattan and did my master's and then kept right on going and did my doctorate from Manhattan. And I have, I guess, a little bit of the scholar bug in me. I continue to study and research and work on things. So that's
gets to
history.
You.
Yeah, history is an interesting part.
Very fascinating. It just begins to open up and you say, well, wait, it's more, let me find out more about this.
History instructs you it instructs your playing, your interpretation, and it also helps you to open your mind to new ideas and reinterpretation. Each time, as you know, as a performer, that you go back to a piece that you haven't played for a while, it's good to look at it with new eyes and new thoughts and with the retroactive inhibition of everything that you've done since the last time or whatever. And so that makes it a very ongoing and very vitalizing experience.
Well, life helps you do that.
It does do that. Yeah. And, I was reading an article the other day about, again, another article about the Mozart effect and the effect of music on the brain. And when you were saying a little earlier about the action and of the brain and how it directs our vision and physically and all these things, the way music and the brain respond to each other is really quite an amazing thing. So that part of music, which is so new to all of us in this century, to know the effect that it can have and how to incorporate that in our lives. And to know that there's some composers in particular, the Baroque music, but especially Mozart, which has such an impact on the brain and how we react to
probably the tonality, the intervals, the structure, the rhythmic structure. Mm-hmm. It is very structured, as is Bach, but...
Yes.
but it puts one in awe even more of
Absolutely.
The human body.
Yes.
That's right.
It's incredible.
Wonderful. So, Gordon, now you are, during the year, you are organist at?
At St. Mary's Episcopal Church in Wayne. I'm the choir director and organist there. And then in the summer, I move my base of operations to Ocean Grove. And during the year, I also do concertizing here and in abroad.
And recordings.
And
well.
Recordings. And I have two scheduled for the fall that I'll be doing.
You know what you're going to be doing?
Well, in one of them is going to be a new recording at Ocean Grove, which will be a somewhat more comprehensive than the last one, which I focused on French literature. This time I'm going to broaden that a little bit, and I'm still working on the repertoire. There'll have to be some Bach in it because I hadn't recorded that before. And the organ has much more of a Bach voice now than it used to with some recent additions. Also, there's an interest, I have interest in an instrument in which I want to do a series of recordings in a grand acoustical space, which I have a particular site in mind that we're working on right now with a sound engineer, of music based on plain song, that's inspired by plain song.
Mm.
And then another recording that I want to do of La Belle Époque, music from the turn of the 19th to 20th century, particularly wonderful music of France and America at that time. And many Americans went to Europe, obviously,
yes.
In the late 19th century, so they absorbed a lot of that wonderful atmosphere. And there's a lot of great music that shows that.
So you have a very specific plan, and we will be speaking with you again as each recording comes out, we hope.
Look forward to it.